welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. My co-host Peter Phillips is in Chile. He'll be bringing us a special segment with several journalism and English professors. Later in the show, we'll hear from independent journalist Christina Borgeson on the latest attempts by the National Transportation Safety Board to silence her work on TWA Flight 800. And we finish the show in discussion with Ken Walden of What the World Could Be, talking about public banking. Ken Walden joins in studio, and he will also be guest host for the day. Please stay with us for the Project Censored Show.
We're not commodities or cars that turn to global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces slaving for almighty dollar bills. We won.
Crimes perpetrated by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guise, democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief. Combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Times running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. My co-host, Peter Phillips, is in Chile today. We are actually trying to reach Peter on the line in Chile. But until we're able to do that, we're going to move to another segment of the program. I'm joined in studio with Ken Walden. Ken Walden is an independent filmmaker, a short independent filmmaker.
Very short films, yes. Hi, Mickey. Yeah,
good. Good to have you in the studio, Ken.
Thanks for having me.
And Ken Walden of What the World Could Be has been doing short films about solutions to our political problems, our economic problems, our social problems. And so it's a very important focus. At Project Censored, we've oft been criticized for having negative stories or pointing out problems and these kind of things. And, of course, that is part of journalism. That's part of what we need to be doing. However, it is also the case that we need to have constructive, feasible, realistic, accessible solutions. And Ken Walden has been working on that for a number of years, and he joins us today for the hour. Again, this segment was supposed to be slated later on in the program, but we're going to go ahead and start talking with Ken Walden right now until we're able to get Peter Phillips in Chile. Ken Walden, give us a little background on What the World Could Be, and I know you want to talk a little bit more about what your passion of the last few months has been, really, with public banking and so on.
Sure,
so go ahead.
Sure. For the record, it wasn't criticism. It was an observation. And the observation, it's an interesting story that I brought to Mickey and the board of Project Censored a couple years ago now, is that a lot of our news just talks about problems. It doesn't talk about how we solve these issues. And so I started myself and actually a large team of people, I'm not the only person involved with this by any means, started looking for solutions. And the reason, you know, one of the things you might be asking is solutions for what? Well, when you solve one problem these days, you're going to solve a lot. For instance, we started looking at the economic situation in depth back in 2007, 2008, around the time of the crash, quote-unquote crash. And that became a interesting rabbit hole of information. When you look at our financial systems and how they work, what caused the crash, you learn that this is a much deeper, more systemic problem. And when we solve those problems, boy, I'll tell you, life should be much, much easier for all of us than it is. So today what we're going to talk about is not just the problem, but the solutions. And when we solve these problems, you know, we should be able to increase our spending power by 5 times or more. Our home loans should be at 1-2%. Credit cards should be at 5-6%. Student loans, you know, you've heard Elizabeth Warren talk about 0.75%, if not less.
Student loan debt has eclipsed $1 trillion. It's more than consumer credit card debt in the United States.
Yeah, it's staggering for students right now. In fact, the latest report I saw was that the average student leaving college has $33,000 in debt, and unemployment for students is 52%. I mean, half of them cannot find jobs. So, you know, it's a tremendous problem. But what we're going to talk about today is what is behind that problem and how to solve it. Interesting facts I usually start some of my discussions with is in the 1950s, the buying power of the dollar was 11 times what it is today, meaning the $20 bill in your pocket had $220 worth of spending power. You could come out of a grocery store with a huge, you know, basket of groceries. And these are adjusted dollars I'm talking about here. In 1920, it was 20 times what it is today. You know, in the 50s, actually, colleges were basically free in 1950. By the end of the 50s, college in adjusted dollars was about $400 a year. And these days, well, you're a professor, I think the UC system is hitting $9,000 a year for students, I think. The numbers, as I take these numbers and enter them into my presentations, the numbers are changing so fast, it's really hard to keep up. So even until the 1970s, most college students could graduate with no debt, even with a master's degree. So what we're seeing here, and all of this comes back, actually, it's amazing how all of this really comes back to a few key issues, and one of them is our banking system. So we were on the show earlier, and we talked about public banks, and a lot of people might have, you know, more and more people are hearing about this, but what is a public bank? A public bank is a non-profit banking system or monetary system. And this isn't a new concept. Actually, 8 times in the history of the United States, we've gone back and forth to a degree between a nonprofit monetary system and a privately owned monetary system. So how does this affect you? Well, first, let's define this a little bit. Right now, whenever there's a school or a bridge or a road that's built, about half the cost of that project, or I should say the cost of that project is doubled often by interest. So for instance, the Bay Bridge, the new retrofit there, that's going to cost about $6 billion. There's going to be an additional $6 billion in interest. There's a new bullet train from San Francisco to Los Angeles that could really, you know, do a lot of good for California. The cost of that project, the first leg of that project, is $10 billion. The interest is expected to be an additional $10 billion. Now, here's the catch with loans like this that most people don't know is that we think when we do a loan for a project like this, this is a bond. Some of the money is taken from investors, and this is a complex topic, but I'm going to simplify this. Most of that money is not taken from other people's deposits or other people's money. It's money created out of thin air. For instance, if you get a home loan or a car loan or a student loan, it's not like you're taking Mrs. Smith's or, you know, Bob Smith's money that they deposited in the bank and that's being loaned to you. Banks actually make this money with a computer entry. They type it in and that money is created out of thin air. Now, it's a little more complicated than that. We have a lot more details on our website, and we invite you to go to the website, whattheworldcouldbe.com, to watch some short movies about this. But so basically, a lot of this money is just created out of thin air. And then they loan it to you and they make tons of profit, they being financial institutions and banks.
Now, Ken Walden, whattheworldcouldbe.com. Ken Walden, I want you to go back and repeat something just for a moment. And I know when you've done public presentations and when you've come to college classes and spoken in my classes on money, power, and politics and so on, the repetition of some of those points, the staggering points. You're talking about the new San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge.
Yes.
And the initial amount slated, its cost, right, yeah, was how much again?
$3 billion. Originally, it ended up costing $6 billion.
And over the years, taxpayers are paying back how much again?
They'll pay an additional $6 billion in interest. So it'll be $12 billion when it's said and done.
Okay. And this is due to the way that the private banking system is established.
What's established is a bond, and a bond is a very complex thing. But in short, some, if not most, of that money is not sitting in somebody's account. It's money that's generated out of thin air. Some of it's financed. But again, with a public banking system, and this is nothing new again. In fact, the Bank of North Dakota is a public bank, and North Dakota's had a public banking system for over 100 years. There are actually 22 states looking at public banks right now. So in that case, what happens is the public bank would create the money out of thin air on a computer screen and loan the money to the project. And sometimes interest is still paid. But what happens when interest is paid with a public bank, the profits from that go back into the treasury for the state. So it would save, like, for instance, Ellen Brown was recently running for treasurer. And Ellen Brown should be credited. She wrote the book on public banks. She was running for treasurer of California. She estimated that about half of the expenditures for schools, roads, and bridges and such would be saved with a public bank for California. California also had this. Actually, both houses of the Senate in California passed AB 750, I believe it was in 2011, and Governor Brown vetoed it. Now, he said that the committee in the state that handles financial issues could address this, but it's gone nowhere. And what we need to do is build one public awareness. Remember, I'm a solutions guy, right? Here's the solution for this: public awareness of this issue, and then us getting involved. And getting involved is super easy. It involves making a phone call or two a month to your politician saying, I want a public bank. I know what it is. I want it. Now, okay, back to what a public bank is, because this is really, it's confusing for most people. There's a couple great quotes from different economists over the years about this issue, and one is from Robert B. Anderson, and he was the Secretary of the U.S. Treasury in 1959. He said, when a bank makes a loan, it simply adds to the borrower's deposit account in the bank by the amount of the loan. The money is not taken from anyone else's deposit. It was not previously paid into the bank by anyone. It's new money created by the bank for the use of the borrower. So again, literally banks type this into their computer. The money is made out of thin air, and it's loaned for things like homes, cars, student loans, etc. Now, when you're talking bonds and public projects, it's a little different, and it's much more confusing. I mean, when you start to dig into a lot of these issues, you will find an incredible amount of confusion regarding these issues. And that's on purpose. When you really get down into this, you find that there is confusion injected into these concepts for a reason. And almost all of us have experienced this with banks. For instance, the bank, you know, they're constantly changing their policies. They're giving you all these fancy reasons why on your home loan they have to charge you a fee or
new and improved fees, right?
Oh, yeah.
New fees for this, secret fees, hidden fees, fees tacked on later that you may not find.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It goes on and on and on. And also, you know, we're paying so much money out of our pocket for interest in general, not only interest on public projects, but for instance, the federal debt. The federal debt, right, the debt of our country, just shot past $17 trillion. It's now over $17.3 trillion. It's going through the roof. And we as a country are paying over $400 billion a year in interest. So how does this relate to you, the listener? If you make $50,000 a year, you're paying normal taxes, you're paying about $14,000 in taxes, $4,000 of that goes to interest on the federal debt. With a public banking, like a nonprofit monetary system, that would be gone. They could make the money out of thin air, loan it to the government at zero, literally at zero interest, and we would start to pay it down.
Well, Ken Walden, some people may question this. What do you mean make out of thin air? And I have to point to the Federal Reserve in particular. You know, the Federal Reserve tried to do this quietly and more secretly, but it was discovered that they had infused some $29 trillion. There are a couple stages, and I believe it's far more than that. What was the last tally?
Well, what happened, and what Mickey's talking about here is the crisis happened, and a lot of different senators and such started looking into our financial system and why this happened.
And the Federal Reserve, which has never been audited.
Yeah, it had never been audited. And you have to understand a little background on the Federal Reserve. It is our central bank. They control our banking system, our monetary system. Part of their charter is to create employment. And the way they create employment is when banks make money available to small businesses can flourish, they can invest. And that's part of what led me into this, is I have a small business, and lines of credit before 2008 were easy to get. So I was growing my business. Things were going great. Then the crash happened, and small businesses started getting their lines of credit pulled. So the Federal Reserve, you know, when I started researching this and going to see economists speak, and actually some of the best information I found was by a gentleman named Carl Herman on Daily Censored, your daily output for news and information, and I highly recommend you read Carl Herman's work. So I read some of Carl's articles, and I called him up, actually. He had a contact number there or an email, and we got in touch, and he was walking me through how the Federal Reserve works, and they literally type money into a computer. They don't have reserves. They don't have any money, actually. They make money out of thin air and loan it to the banks at a very, very low interest rate, and then that gets loaned out to us. So all of our money, actually, when you get deeper into this, is created as debt. So what happened during the crash, when more and more people got interested in what happened, this was actually led by Ron Paul and some Democrats and Republicans alike, finally got an audit of the Federal Reserve, because we really don't know a lot of what they're doing. And this was astounding, actually, when I heard about this. What happened during that time from 2008 to 2010 and a half? The Federal Reserve secretly, this without an act of Congress, members of Congress didn't know about this, they created around $29 trillion. And they loaned it out not only to financial institutions, because their books are underwater, right? Not only did they loan it out to banks and financial institutions in the U.S., they loaned it out to foreign banks. They also loaned it out to corporations like GE, McDonald's, Verizon. And they were loaning this money out at 0.01%, a hundredth of a percent. Now, any small business owner out there, and small businesses, by the way, create 80% of the jobs in this country. 80%. That's huge. So no money for small businesses. That's why we were losing jobs, hemorrhaging jobs, you know, tremendously back in 2008. And the situation, when you really look at the numbers, has not gotten much better. So, yeah, the Federal Reserve did this. Not only did they do that, they loaned money out to individuals. Bernie Sanders' office actually did a report on this, and I was reading their report, and there were individuals in Mexico and Bahrain and Bavaria and these, you know, offshore accounts that are getting huge injections of money at 0.01%. This was a partial audit. A partial audit.
Right. But small businesses can't get these rates. Student loans can't get these rates. Consumer credit cards aren't getting these rates. And, of course, they didn't want anyone to know about this.
They didn't want anyone to know. They had to force an audit.
Yeah.
And there was a fight over it. And there was definitely a big fight. Alan Grayson, he's online and he talks about this. You can go to YouTube, to Alan Grayson, Federal Reserve, $26 trillion, and you'll find this clip. You could download the report, the GAO, General Accounting Office report of this, and look at who they loaned the money to.
So one of the, again, we're speaking with Ken Walden of what the world could be, and of course what we were saying is what the world could be if there were means by which or ways in which to change that system. And of course, prior to this, we were just talking about public banks, public banking, and that's one of the solutions.
Yeah, and a public bank could also be called a nonprofit bank or a nonprofit monetary system, means you take the Federal Reserve back from private hands. And you have to know also that 40% of the banks in the world actually are nonprofit banks. This is nothing new. You get rid of the Federal Reserve, you put it under the Treasury, and you generate money for the public interest, for the public good. You, in fact, in North Dakota, what is it? Small businesses can get loans for the first 5 years for 1%.
Again, this is some amazing information. We're speaking with Ken Walden, What the World Could Be. We are going to take a brief musical break, and we will be right back. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio.
When corporate capital face the government, break their promise. It's a new day when people create the policy. The economy trickles up to eradicate the poverty. So get up, stand up. These are our demands. What we want, our money back. So politicians, get your hands up. Equal distribution.
distribution of the land and the profits, an end to all war and a socialized democracy.
I'm fighting and slaying the clash of the titan supremacists, fighting my nemesis, fighting and slaying the right wing with media hype. But Chuck D was right to believe the hype, perceiving the issues, leaving the fists with even intensity. He's seeking missiles, visible agents impacting the pistols, subliminal goals, steal your souls for global control, corporations back home, political wars patrolling the shores, wars and stores that keep us on war, ignoring the cure for what's in the core, blowing the floor in the third world war, creating the wars for mineral ore. Come on, y'all, we gotta fight back with rebellion politics, the opposite of what you know is politics, where corporate capital makes the government break their promise. It's a new day where people create the policy, the economy trickles up to eradicate the poverty. So get up, stand up, these are our demands. We want our money back, so politicians, get your hands up. Equal distribution of the land and the profits, an end to all war and a socialized democracy.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff, and we have been speaking with Ken Walden of What the World Could Be. We're going to wrap this segment because we did finally make contact with my usual co-host, Peter Phillips, who is in Chile. So we're going to talk about some things going on in Chile. But before we segue to that segment, I want to finish up with Ken Walden here for 1 minute. So Ken Walden, go ahead, tell people a little bit about where to go, and you're going to stay with us for the hour, so yes, we might have time to get back to this later.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a confusing issue, and what we're trying to do, what we're actually doing with our website, go to the website, What the World Can Be. There's very, very simple videos on there, some extra resources you can watch, and then also action items. Sign up on our website. Join us, because there is a growing coalition of people pushing for public banks. Over 20 different states are looking at public banks. In San Francisco, John Avalos's office is pushing for a public bank. So this is a movement that's happening. Go to our website for more information and also solutions. We need everyone to get on board with this, because if more people take action and become aware of it, that's how we're going to make this change happen.
Thanks so much, Ken Walden. And again, you'll be with us in studio here today, guest hosting. While we now segue to the next segment, we are joined by my co-host, Dr. Peter Phillips, who is in Chile this week for Press Freedom Day. And Peter, you join us by phone.
Yes, we do. Thank you very much, Mickey. It's great to talk to you. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
And so we also have Lorena Espinoza, a journalist, on the line.
Yes, here I am. Nice to meet you guys by the phone.
Thank you for joining us.
And who else? Lorena is a journalist here at the University of La Frontera. Also joining us later today will be Angela Caballero, who's an English teacher here at the university. We're calling from Temuco, which is a regional city about 500 miles south of Santiago, and they're celebrating National Press Day. So I want to have Lorena talk about that. Why is National Press Day so important?
Actually, this is the Journalist Day, because in 1956, the college founded the first journalist college, and that's why we are celebrating the day today all along the country.
I think one of the difficulties with journalism, and this is the third university I visited in the last 2 days, is the remnants of the coup from 1973. Journalism was really just founded at that point in terms of professional journalism, and there was a great deal of repression. Journalists were killed, and it was a terrible situation. Now we're back to democracy here, but there's kind of remnants of that. I'm hearing students say that they're still worried or afraid. So what is the situation today?
Well, it's very hard today sometimes, because the journalists still, we have some kind of censor rolling over us. The media, there are two big journals in Chile, and they also have the agenda, you know. So sometimes it's very difficult to do some the correct information or to do some research that to show the people what is going on. But we're always trying to find and following the truth.
Corporate media is privately owned by a handful of families. Does that creates an issue of censorship?
Yeah, of course. The two families that running those medias are very strong and very powerful. They have a lot of money, you know, a lot of companies, and they have a kind of holding of medias.
Let's go over and ask Angela Caballero. She's an English teacher here. What's the state of independent media in Chile, Angela?
I think that is growing, and they work, and the work they do, I think, is very important because it's what people really want to know. I'm talking about the health service, sometimes bribery and stuff. So I think that this job is important because the investigation they do is about what I mean, that they talk for people.
Well, that's really important. And we were meeting with the president of the college just about an hour ago,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And they're like questioning whether journalism should continue. Because they say there's not enough jobs for the students.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we were responding, well, maybe journalists can have another job but still do telling the truth for the people.
Yes. I think that most of the young people who want to apply for the journalist career, they feel a bit discouraged because sometimes when they graduate, maybe they can't find a job, and sometimes the salaries are poor. But the university, the UFRO is trying to encourage students who wants to study this career to keep on.
Let's go back to Lorena. Chile is a very strong supporter of U.S. and capitalism. In many ways, when Kissinger helped organize the coup here, it was an experiment in maintaining capitalism and fighting communism or socialism in any form. Where's the chance? What's today? What's the situation here?
Well, today I think we realize what we are like, a kind of experiment about the Chicago Boys and everything. But the most important thing I think that is going on, that the people doesn't realize how the capitalism influence their lives, because we have a lot of stuff going on that has to do with health, education, the quality of life of the people in the golden age, and all that kind of things has to do with the capitalism and the model of the capitalism.
Yes.
Sorry, my English, guys. I don't speak English every day, so I'm trying to do my best here.
Well, you're both doing very well. Thank you. We're in a region called Frontera, and that means the frontier, which originally, historically, this area was occupied by Mapuche people, and even the Incas didn't come down here for a very long time. They were ultimately conquered by the Spaniards and occupied, but they're very independent people here. Is there a press that works with Mapuche people, and there's some here at the university? Is that correct?
No, not here in the university.
No. Lorena, we talked about that earlier.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have some news in a website in the region that calls Mapuche News. But here in the university, we don't have those kind of press, you know. But sometimes all the Mapuche people try to explain and try to talk about their origins, about their culture, and we have some space in some mass media, in some journals, and we gave them that space to talk about themselves. Not always, but we try.
And Mickey, there's a celebration here of press freedom. And it's very important. I think it's part of the democratic movement in the country to really, you know, press that as an ideal. But as I've talked to the different students at the various universities, there's a reservation about whether they will be actually able to be fully free and fully truthful. So when they read our Project Censored stories, they wonder if they can do the same thing in many cases. And I think the answer is certainly within corporate media here in Chile that that's really not possible.
Well, Peter,
would you agree with?
We know that's not terribly if it's possible, it's highly unlikely, even in the United States, which is why, of course, Project Censored has to exist. And what is the possibility then for a student bottom up grassroots type of independent media there?
Well, can you answer that?
Well, we are trying to work with a new line of working, you know, because. We already understand that it's not only a way to do a reporter or to do some kind of journalism. We are trying to do some new entrepreneurship, to trying to work with a little companies or work in the universities, and we are trying to expand our field of jobs.
And they're talking too about independent media and on the web, on websites, and even local print papers and that sort of thing is going on down here a bit.
So, Peter, one of the other points that I know folks wanted to bring up to audiences here in the United States is about 10 individuals possess more than 15% of the GDP. In Chile, and two men are owners of all the newspapers in the country. I mean, that's pretty riveting.
It's a very top-down capitalistic country. I think that everybody's been saying that to us here. Lorena, could you talk about that a little bit?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Well, I was just remarking upon the fact that in Chile, about 10 people have possess more than 15% of the GDP,
yes.
And two men, Edwards and Saye, are owners of basically all the papers, major newspapers in the country. And some people have called Chile the North Korea of capitalism.
Oh, well, I think it's very strong to say that, but no, it's not so much. But yeah, it's true. All the things you said in the first time, it's true. But also, we are trying. There are people we are trying to do and to say that it's not good that kind of system. But well. I'm very shocked because your idea about that we are like a North Korea.
No, that was a quote. That was a quote from somebody else. That was a quote from someone talking about how there's massive wealth concentrated in a few people. In other words, talking about how Chile is sort of an extreme example of an unregulated capitalist structure. Basically, that it's a top down system, both controlling the economy, a handful of people having a lot of wealth in the economy, and only two people controlling the major newspapers. I mean, that's serious control there.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think I already said there are big two families in Chile that has the control of the media, and also there are a lot of little journals and websites, radio, local radio, that are trying to fight against this monopoly of information.
And as, go ahead, Peter.
You know, as when I talk to the students here, I talk about our research study in the Censored 14 book and the transnational corporate class and the 1%, 1,000 of 1%, and the U.S. NATO empire that is in support of capital penetration worldwide. They fully understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know that this is happening. They recognize that. But then how does that deal with them in their lives and their careers and the possibilities of what they're going to say? I think there's certainly, in my mind, real optimism here that media will make a difference and that there can be some serious Democrat change here.
Well, Peter, two things. One for Lorena. Could you give us a website or is there a way you could try to help people understand more about what's going on in Chile and more about what's happening with National Journalism Day? Is there anywhere you could point to people to go online?
Well, you can visit maybe www.theclinic.cl.
Mm-hmm.
maybe the other one and very important is www.ciper.co. And also to do some contrast in between their information, you can visit www.emol.co.
And Peter, you're there for National Journalism Day, and thank you so much for helping put together all of this. It's great to hear you in Chile, but it also underscores, you know, a good point to end on. It also underscores that, you know, in the United States here, Project Censored and a number of other groups, of course, struggle for press freedom and protection of whistleblowers and so forth, and the fight against censorship. But we need to remember that this is a global struggle, and things are worse even other places. Peter, and
it's absolutely a global struggle. I think the young people here in particular, and then many of the elders who I'm here with, who were journalists 40 years ago during the coup and fled the country, they tell each other the stories, and they recognize that they won't want to see this ever happen again.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Certainly, thank you for going to Chile this week. I know you're going on a whirlwind tour and going to be talking to a lot of people and have a lot to talk about when you return. So I'm sure we'll be revisiting this subject and the subject of the importance of international press freedom. Lorena,
I'm glad
go ahead, Peter.
I'm glad we were able to get the telephones corrected and online so we could do the show here today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Lorena, thank you so much for joining us and for what you're doing. And you two all should go and celebrate National Journalism Day in Chile.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lorena. Thank you, Angela.
After this brief musical break, we will be right back to talk to independent journalist Christina Borgeson. Stay with us.
So get up, stand up, these are our demands. What, we want our money back, so politicians get your hands up. Equal distribution of the land and the profits, an end to all war and a socialized democracy.
Slaying the clash of the titans, the premises, fighting my nemesis, fighting, exciting the right wing with media hype. But Chucky was right to believe the hype, perceiving the issue, misleading the fists, receiving intentions, and he's taking missiles, visible agents, and packing the pistols, subliminal goals.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. We just ended a segment with my co-host Peter Phillips, who is in Chile for National Journalism Day, fighting for more press freedom in Chile. We've been joined with Ken Walden in studio, and he is still with us. We're talking about what the world could be, and Ken will wrap things up with us today. But we now go to our next segment. That is with independent journalist Christina Borgeson. And Christina has worked inside and out of the so-called mainstream press, which we call, of course, the corporate media here. She's certainly done a lot of other things on her own. She is definitely what we could call an information warrior. And she's also edited some really fantastic books, Feet to the Fire and Into the Buzzsaw, about censorship in the U.S. press. And she recently, well, can't say recently, she's been working for some time, quite a while, on this new documentary, TWA Flight 800. And Christina is joining us again on the program. We talked about this months ago, and we've had Christina on the show before. But there are ongoing developments in this story with TWA Flight 800. And Christina, you join us today to talk to us a little about that.
Yes. After a year of consideration, the National Transportation Safety Board rejected our petition to reopen the investigation. And they rejected the petition. I mean, it's so, you know, it's just crazy because they rejected the petition on just one inaccuracy after another about the evidence.
But Christina, very quickly before we go into that, could you remind our listeners what exactly is TWA Flight 800 and what is the film about?
TWA Flight 800
is the an airplane that exploded off the coast of Long Island in 1996, and hundreds of eyewitnesses saw events in the sky, and the earliest events were seen by more than 100 eyewitnesses who said they saw something go up and hit the plane and make the plane explode. Some people called it a streak of light. Some people called it a missile. Some people called it a rocket. And anyway, as a result of that, you know, people thought there was a missile was involved, but the upshot of this very long corrupt investigation was that no missile was involved, and there was a mechanical failure involving a spark that sparked fuel vapors in the center wing fuel tank, except they closed down the investigation before they could even find the ignition source for that spark. And our film, 17 years later, it took us this long to really go through the evidence and to build our record. Our film basically documents the hard forensic evidence using six whistleblowers who were part of the original investigation, who handled that forensic evidence, and who say, yes, indeed, the plane's demise was caused by ordnance exploding outside the airplane.
So that's a pretty amazing statement.
Yes.
And certainly your film, people can see your film various places. They can go online to Flight 800 Doc. That's like documentary, flight800doc.com. And it's wonderful. You have an entire segment, not just on frequently asked questions, but the petition, screenings, and also a segment on fact checking.
Yes.
Which brings us, and this is, again, this is the part that I love the most, and that is, you know, going over the attacks and the things that people will try to say and try to distort about the arguments and the evidence that you have helped bring forward, and you have a rejoinder to it. And what's amazing to me is that you're carrying on a dialogue that should be taking place in the media.
Yes, exactly. Well, as a matter of fact, one of the reasons why it's not taking place in the media is because the media for the last 17 and a half years have been handmaidening the official sources who have been lying about the evidence. And so, and one of the worst offenders is CNN. And CNN keeps bringing on, for example, former National Transportation Safety Board board member John Golia, you know, who keeps he just keeps misrepresenting the eyewitness information. He never mentions any of the explosives evidence. He just keeps up his lies, and you know, they include no evidence in aircraft fuselage wreckage of explosion next to the aircraft. That's simply not true. I mean, radar showed something moving at four times the speed of sound right outside the airplane. And I mean, there's all kinds. You can go on our website and see all this stuff. But this guy John Golia, and he just came out recently in Forbes online and wrote something else again, just and also personally attacking us. And you know, they have something coming up soon on CNN for the anniversary. And again, what we do is every time particularly a well-known outlet puts out inaccuracies and disinformation, we just rebut it point by point by point. If it's on video, we do it with video. If it's written, we rebut in writing, and then we send our rebuttal to the reporter, and we send it to the reporter's boss, and then we send it out to everybody.
And you get back crickets.
Oh, well, it's been very interesting, because what happens is oftentimes the reporters who did write bad pieces, like the guy who did the New York Magazine piece that was absolutely crazy, you know, they sort of recede, and then somebody else comes forward writes something.
Again, the pattern here has been ignore the evidence you bring forward, create other things out of thin air that aren't even necessarily being argued, and then attack that. That's the straw
person. Yeah, that's called look here, not there. That's a very common thing that they do.
The straw person, the ad hominem, attacking you directly, red herring, changing the subject, appeals to emotion. Again, these are all the hallmarks of sloppy, weak, uncritical thinking, and the role of a free press is to call that out.
Yes.
And that's what you've been doing your whole career.
Yes.
And you've certainly paid for that.
Yes. And the thing is the thing about the TWA story, I mean, people keep saying to me, oh my God, you're so obsessed, TWA. But you have to understand what we've done with this story, which is this is the most comprehensively documented instance of multi-agency collusion within the federal government, okay, and how the press handmaidened that that collusion and sent out this information to the public. It is truly the most documented case of an official cover-up, and we want to use that as a model for other cases, you know, like the run-up to the Iraq War. I mean, if we could get some good whistleblowers on that, because the bigger issue here is there's this constant situation going on with all kinds of issues, whether it's the banks, the run-up to the Iraq War, you know, TWA 800, where there is multi-agency collusion, and they get away with it.
Well, Christina, part of the reason that you and I both know this, that they get away with it, is the handmaidening by the press,
right,
and a lack of public awareness in many cases of these issues. Let's briefly get back to the NTSB petition that where we were starting, and tell us a little bit about Peter Goal's inaccurate and misleading information here.
Okay, Peter Goals, there are several things that he likes to do. First of all, he likes to say very few eyewitnesses actually saw the originating event. You know, and they give a small percentage, a very small percentage of them, when that's actually not true. And that's he and Jim Kallstrom of the who headed up the FBI's investigation into TWA 800, into whether it was a criminal event or not. They use that very often. Okay, and then he'll say things like eyewitness accounts aren't supported by the radar. Okay, and which is not true. Okay, but he'll just say it. And Goals tends to Golia tends to, there are two people. There's Peter Goals, who was part of the managing director for NTSB, and then there's Golia, who was a National Transportation Safety Board member. But they're doing the same thing. They always try and attack the eyewitnesses, because the eyewitnesses, there were so many of them that they're hard to suppress. Then they go after the radar data, but the way they defend themselves is by saying things like, well, the NTSB spent thousands of hours looking into this. They did two investigations. They did they never address the hard radar evidence, because they're not really that familiar with it. You know, they're not the scientists. They're not the aviation accident investigators. They are just the spokespeople who are trying to, and they rely on the public and the press accepting their official source prestige. You know, I was a board member of the National Transportation Safety Board. I was a managing director, so you know I would not lie to the public, and it's simply not true.
Well, unfortunately, Christina, we know that that's not true. You documented that in the film. You can go online, flight800doc.com. I mean, I urge people, I know you do, I'm urging people to see the film and see the evidence, and then go on the website and look at these charges, rebuttals, and so on, and let people be their own judge, use their own critical thinking skills to come to the conclusion here. This isn't about propagandizing and saying, oh, the government is evil and bad and they're covering everything up. This is not a banal, generic kind of statement that we're getting into.
Oh, no, as a matter of fact, the lead... the lead investigator on our team, because we are a team. By the way, it's not on flight800doc.com. The film is not on there.
No.
It's on Netflix, and it's on Epix HD. Flight800doc.com is our website where you can see the trailer, and you can see the rebuttals, and you can see our rebuttal to the NTSB petition, and you can get all the news that's going on. You can see all our press releases. Like, we just sent out a press release where we detailed all the sources to avoid.
Yes.
You know, like Jim Kallstrom and Peter Goals and so on. And we detail why, you know, where they have provided, what misinformation they have provided, and what the truth is. And then we also detail common misinformation that's put out about this TWA case. So we sent that out because, you know, the anniversary is coming up on the 17th, and there's going to be a lot of press coverage. And so we want people to know when they see Jim Kallstrom, this guy, you know, the FBI, former FBI head of the criminal investigation, you know that this guy has lied to the public numerous times. Mr. Golia has lied to the public numerous times, you know, and so we name names. And I think we're actually the first investigative team who has stood up and been so active in coming back to people who are covering this story and you know, misinforming the public about the facts.
Christina, it's also Christina Borgeson. It's also the case when you're talking about this type of this pattern of multi-agency collusion.
Yes.
And it does remind me of what's going on with the Kent State shootings in some part that's now at the UN. And only because the key thing that triggered that for me was, you know, Dennis Kucinich, when he was in Congress, tried to get another investigation opened up. They then refused to look at the new evidence and denied the petition and denied to reopen the case. And that's kind of what's going on here with NTSB.
Well, that's the thing, is that what has to happen now, and this is why, remember I was talking to you about how we need to bring forward all these different whistleblower cases and look at the patterns and look at, you know, who shows up. Like on TWA and on the run-up to the Iraq War, George Tenet, you know, plays an important role in both of those. You know, people's names do keep coming up, mm-hmm. and you have to keep naming the names, and you have to look at who's connected to whom and how things worked. And if we can really start taking the brick out of the wall and then forcing accountability because of just, you know, constant pounding at the federal government, because this is our federal government, this is our tax dollars at work against us. These are these bureaucracies that have gotten so big and so powerful that their primary interest is to protect themselves and to protect, you know, powerful institutions and businesses before they really care about, you know, the average American whose tax dollars are actually funding these institutions. And so we need to break through the mindset, first of all, among the general public that oh no, you know, our president wouldn't lie to us like that, or our Secretary of State doesn't lie. Listen, they all do. They all do. And you have to start from that, and just like, you know, Ronald Reagan says, trust but verify.
Yes.
You say something, fine, but I'm going to have to verify it.
And we don't get to quote Ronald Reagan often, but when I do, that's the one I go to. Trust but verify. Christina Borgeson, I can't thank you enough for joining us and for
your tireless,
brave work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And in a couple of weeks here in Washington, D.C., July 28th to 31, is the Whistleblower Summit. So I urge people to check that out. Christina, if you're not going to be there, maybe you want to plan to be there. I think we're going. Rumor has it Project Censored has won an award, and
wonderful.
We'll be going to the Whistleblower Summit. So,
oh, that's fantastic. I didn't even know it was going on.
Every year, July 30 is National Whistleblowers Day. We need a whistleblower to tell people that it's Whistleblower Day, basically, because the Obama administration has really conducted quite hostile efforts in suppressing whistleblowers.
Yes, they've been very active, and it's very shocking and upsetting.
Well, Christina, thanks so much for your work. We urge listeners to check out your film on Flight 800. Go online, flight800doc.com, to learn more. Thank you for joining us today, Christina Borgeson.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Mickey.
Very welcome. This is Mickey Huff. I'm on the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. We have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to turn to the guest that we started the program with. It was Ken Walden, who's been sitting here with me the hour. Certainly helped us out when we had a little bit of a challenge reaching Peter Phillips in Chile. Want to give Herculean thanks to Erica Bridgman, our board op, for handling all of that today. Anthony Fest, our producer, is not here as well. So big, big kudos to Erica for all of her efforts and support today. Ken Walden, we got a minute or two left, and I just want to hit on solutions. We just heard Christina Borges and really end there, getting to, like, what do we have to do? How do we have to go forward? Sure. How do we pressure? But, again, this is your big thing, the solution. Sure. So yeah. Let's hear the one-minute spiel on solutions, because we're going to have you back next week to talk about something that most people know nothing about. That's CAFR.
CAFR, yeah, that's a big issue for sure. Well, earlier in the show, just to rebrief for those who have tuned in, we were talking about public banks and how money for loans, and whether it's a car loan, a home loan, student loans, business loans, this money is generally made out of thin air. And often for public projects like roads, bridges, and schools, it's money that's made out of thin air. And it doesn't need to be this way. And when we're talking about public banks, what we're doing is talking about changing our financial system to a nonprofit system, which would save us a tremendous amount of money. I mean, it would save you over a third of your taxes, if not more. So on our website, whattheworldcouldbe.com, we have short movies that explain this, and we also have a list of solutions, how people can get involved, because the first thing is people being aware of this issue. And it's a complex issue, but we've made some very, very simple short movies that people can watch. I also have to give a couple thanks out, because we have a tremendous board of people who have helped us with this, to Ivor Heistad. He's been tremendously helpful. Leslie Chang stepped up today to help with the production. Joe Hirasawa, Tiffany Lockridge. So we've got a lot of people who've really gotten on board with this, and we'd like to see other people out there get on board. Go to our website, and you'll see a list of solutions. Awareness is first, telling your friends, and then simple things like phone calls to our politicians. It's really easy.
So next week, Ken Walden, we'll have you back to talk a little bit about CAFR.
That's a huge issue.
It's
that
a huge
will blow
one.
Your mind.
If you don't know what CAFR is, C-A-F-R, folks, look it up for next week. We'll be talking about it on the Project Censored Show. Ken Walden, thanks so much for joining us. Peter Phillips in Chile, usual co-host. We'll be back next week. Also, a special thanks to Christina Borgeson. Thanks to Erica Bridgman at the controls. I'm Mickey Huff. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. Special thanks also to Junkyard Empire for providing our theme music and break music. And learn more about Project Censored online at projectcensored.org. You can hear the archives of our show at projectcensored.org. Please tune in again next week.
Liberated land, supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own my special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game, maintain my reign for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cars that turn to global.